Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, you are listening to the C-Squared podcast with me, Holly, and I'm playing head host today, and Curtis is my co-host. That's what I'm going to call you now anyway. And we are here today with the lovely Brett from Jester, who released their new album yesterday. So it's all very exciting. It's all brand new. We're going to ask him lots of questions about random stuff. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on.
So just for everybody who's listening, we're totally unprepared for this podcast. But I did. So because I had a call that ran really long this morning and I was planning on being prepared. So this is going to be a random shit show with Brett from Jester, who I've met a few times. Holly's never talked to him before. So this is going to be kind of wild and woolly. So Holly's supposed to be the lead on this, but I'm going to take over for a brief second here because I want to start it off with the very first question, which is, Brett, can you please give us a brief nutshell version of who you are, what you do, and that type of fun stuff?
Yeah. I'm a guitar player and singer, frontman, whatever, for Jester. That's what I do, and that's who I am. And we're from Lafayette, Louisiana, deep south, playing music that doesn't quite fit down here, but that's all right.
You know what's funny? So I was just talking to someone about Louisiana not that long ago. So can you kind of go over, how do I want to phrase this? What it's like for, like, you don't play, like, Louisiana is known for like jazz and shit like that and like,
oh, yeah,
all like that. So how do you guys kind of fit into that scene even though you're not playing that style of music?
Not super well. We just kind of, it's, and you know, Lafayette in particular and just like the deep south is known a lot for its like sludge and doom metal, and Lafayette in particular, that's most of what's been like coming out of this area for years. So we just kind of squeezed ourselves in. I mean, it's what I wanted to do. And I think it works as kind of a, I mean, I don't want to sound like, I'm tooting my own horn or anything, but it is kind of like weird to have something that's not either Zydeco jazz or this doom and sludge metal kind of stuff. So it's working in our favor so far. And it's nice. People are like, oh, wow, this is weird.
Cool. Can you tell the listeners whereabouts in Louisiana you are?
Yeah, so Lafayette, Louisiana, it's Acadiana 337. It's like pretty much smack in the middle of the state, down towards the bottom. So parallel with Beaumont, all that good stuff. I mean, we're about 2 hours north of New Orleans.
Cool. A dumb question. This is totally non-music related. Are you guys allowed to do the open carry booze thing where you're at, or is that just in New Orleans?
Oh yeah, really? No, totally. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really cool. And it's weird. Like anytime I've been to other states and, we try to go like been to a bar or something, you walk out with a beer and everybody's like, Hey, man, you can't do that. It's like, why? But.
So, okay. So Holly, you must have a question about this.
Sorry. I'm, as you can tell, not from your neck of the woods. So I'm just interested.
Ask away.
I guess, yeah. So do you guys do quite a few live performances then around Louisiana, or do you sort of travel out of state, or is it a bit of both?
So far, it's just been in the state. I'd really like to branch out and get kind of out of the state just to play. There's other markets, I think, that work a lot better for the genre of music, and that's the main reason. But I mean, Louisiana is a great market for any kind of live music, especially New Orleans, Hammond area. I mean, people just, they like their music. They like to party. Any reason to go out, Louisiana is pretty good for that. But yeah, I know there's some better markets fit for what we do. And we're definitely looking to get out and do that as well.
That's cool. So have you noticed with like the new album coming out, have you got like, I don't know, say people streaming maybe from other parts of the world, maybe in different scenes, have you noticed that sort of thing?
Yeah, I've definitely I've seen a lot of play from South America, which is cool. I've always heard that South America just has a knack for really digging on like just any kind of rock, really. And so like we did is a little bit of some targeted ads for South America just like a while back when we dropped Scare You, I think. And ever since then, I mean, I pretty consistently see streams from like Chile and Argentina and stuff like that. It's like, oh, okay, well, I guess we got to go to South America one day whenever we can, hopefully.
You ever get come to Brazil comments?
Not yet. I see them all the time, though, on other people's posts. And just I'm like, I want to go to Brazil, too.
I'm sorry. I'm going off the rails. Holly, you got to get us back on the rails here. So you take back.
I guess like touring wise, if you could do any tour, where would you go? Like what would be your top cities or countries?
Ooh, so top of the list for me is for sure Columbus, Ohio. I hear stuff all the time about it being really like in tune with the kind of music we play. Tons of bands that I really dig are from that area. So that would be a place. I've played along the West Coast a lot, and I really enjoyed playing Seattle. Olympia in particular had a really cool crowd. And San Diego, of all places in that area, was awesome. Like we did Los Angeles one night, and this was with another band I was touring with. And Los Angeles was kind of it was a week kind of thing. And then the next night we played San Diego and it was just two different worlds. So Seattle, San Diego, and Columbus, Ohio are definitely on top of the list.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I want to just for one real quick second. So we're going to go off the rails for a minute here again because Holly's putting it back into proper territory here. So let's talk for a minute here about, okay, so you guys do play live sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So what is your craziest story that you have from a show that you guys have played, if you have a crazy story?
Oh, okay. So I think at our very first show, like it was already crazy that we managed to pull a pretty decent crowd just for a debut show. But like halfway through the set, somebody had brought a pack of underwear and they threw it on stage. So for like 2.5 songs, I had underwear hanging off of my guitar. I think I put a pair.
Male or female underwear, just as a clarification.
It was male underwear, but it was clean. It was out of the pack. So
ask that. Okay.
That's all right.
Did I investigate sure it was clean? Did like if someone threw underwear at me, I don't think I would be like.
Hey man, well, hey, you know, you gotta put on the show and the people loved it.
Okay. So. Okay.
And that has unfortunately become a little bit of a theme. So like every other show we've played, the same dude shows up with a fresh pack of underwear and he throws it on stage and people are just like, hey, yeah, that's the band that does the underwear thing. Like, okay, yeah, cool.
So have you made your own Jester underwear yet? Because you might as well, like, you could sell him a pack of your own branded underwear for him to throw at you.
That is a wonderful, you know, we've been going for shirts and stickers, but we'll drop the traditions or Jester boxers.
So to get this back on rails, I'm going to ask an actual serious question. Okay, so we kind of already went over that the album got released yesterday. So Dead and Rich, I always want to say the Dead and the Riches, but it's the Dead and Riches.
Yeah.
Actually, why did you call it the Dead and Riches and not the Dead and the Riches?
It's in the way that it's written, like, I guess just in whatever the actual Greek mythology is for Hades, his title is Hades, the Lord of the Underworld, the Dead and Riches. And so I just used it in the way it was written. And I just like the way it kind of sounds anyway, it, like has this edgy tone to it. And then you listen to the record, it's like, oh, this is like pop alternative rock.
Yeah, that's kind of, okay. So yeah, let's talk about this for a second here, because you kind of meld genres. You got the pop, you got the alternative, you almost got the metal, you got the hard rock, you got a lot of different things going on, at least in my opinion, but it's kind of hooky. So it always, you don't be offended by this. I hope that this doesn't offend you. Reminds me of the Fall Out Boy at times. I don't know if that was intentional, but it's kind of reminds me of that. You like it? Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Cool. Then probably I don't need to ask you the rest of the question, because I was going to ask you, like, what were some of the bands that did influence you guys when coming up with your style?
Yeah, so it was just a lot of, I think during the actual writing of it was a lot of alternative rock, but I had come from playing in metal bands. So I was in a hardcore band for a while. And then I did this, I was in like a doom metal thing for a while. And I just wanted to branch away from that and just went back to what I was listening to whenever I was a teenager. And then as I got older, it was like, oh yeah, I don't listen to those bands. And then I started going back and I was like, there's no reason I should act like I don't like this stuff. And the more I got into it again, I really started picking apart what it was I liked about it. So bands like Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance, of course. And then the Beatles is like the number one, my biggest influence for sure. So it's just picking up on that kind of stuff. And then working with Dylan too, who produced the record, he was pulling up all kinds of really cool references. So like with Spellbound, he was pulling up a lot of gospel stuff and he was like, I just want to do a song that has a choir in it. And so he's pulling up all these old Elvis songs and just really weird out there, like 1940s gospel from like the backwoods of Texas. And he was like, we should do something like this. And so, yeah, it's just all kinds of really just pop. I love pop. I'm a total sucker for pop and I wanted to make a pop record. So
fair. So what would you say? I don't want to phrase this here. Which one of those bands would you say would be the most influential on your sound out of the ones you named? Because you named a bunch, but what is the?
The number one easily is the Beatles. Yeah. It's almost cliche to say, but I love them, you know?
So how does someone your age, because you look like you're in your 20s. I'm assuming you're in your 20s, correct?
26.
So how does someone who's 26 get into the Beatles out of curiosity? I mean, obviously it was earlier, but.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, my dad was like super into thrash metal and all that kind of stuff. I grew up listening to that. And then he turned me on to classic rock, so Boston and Led Zeppelin. And then just eventually it got back to Black Sabbath. That was the one he was like, man, you're really going to like this. And at the time it didn't quite click with me. He was like, okay, if you don't like this, he said, at least check this out. And he got me the red and the blue Beatles compilation CDs, those double albums. And it was game on. As soon as I heard it, I was like, yeah, I was like, this is it. And yeah, that was it. It just appealed like the older stuff, the earlier, like 1963 to, I guess, up to Rubber Soul kind of clicked with me as a kid. And then as I got a little bit older, I started getting into the more psychedelic kind of weirder era of it, and it just opened doors to everything else I really like.
Interesting. I can hear that in your sound. What would you say would be your favorite Beatles record out of curiosity?
I know it's not technically an LP, but Magical Mystery Tour.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Isn't that the one that's got like half instrumentals? Or yeah, it is, isn't it?
No, that yeah. Well, that one's got Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane and then Blue Jay Way and all that. And to me, it was like the perfect blend of like the really weird psychedelic stuff and then like almost the like grandpa music, I think is what John would call Paul's music. So I love that, you know, release.
Yeah, I was when you said Magical Mystery Tour, I flipped over to Yellow Submarine for a second, and now I got it straight. I have both the albums. I just like totally.
Oh yeah,
brain went in the wrong way. Holly, what do you think of the Beatles out of curiosity? Since you're the resident Brit here,
it's one of those things. I've got to be in the mood to listen to them. Okay. Some of it's not necessarily my thing, but I will say my favorite Beatles song is Eleanor Rigby, and I could listen to that over and over and over again.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the one.
Interesting. Okay, so now we talked about the Beatles. So now, let's talk about the album art. Like you put out, how many singles did we do? Four singles?
Four.
Three singles?
Yeah.
Four singles. Yeah. Okay. Four singles. So now you did unique art for each single that you did. How did you kind of figure out what kind of art you would use for each single?
You know, a lot of it was just looking at other bands. Like, I think for the Scare You artwork, I was listening to Pup. If you guys are familiar with them, or Canadian, like pop punk band, pop punk band sort of, and their artwork is kind of in that vein, and I saw that and I was like, yeah, I was like, I want to do something like that. And then Charlatan was weird. I was playing around with like a bunch of editing apps I have on my phone. I'm always trying to get better at, you know, whatever it is, filmography or digital design, and put that together. And then the By Design artwork, to me, was, I really like it. It was something my dad, he's, you know, he paints and all that. And it was a painting he did, like, I don't know, not like 94 or 93 or something, a couple of years before I was born. And it's always been one of my favorite paintings of his. So I was like, well, you know, I asked him, I was like, can I use this? He's like, yeah. So we did that. And then the album artwork itself was just another thing. It was a sketch that my dad had initially drew for the band. And then I sent it off to Allison Thompson, who did the majority of the artwork that we have out. And she used that as a reference point and then just kind of built off of that. I like the idea of the different biomes because the album kind of has to do with a trip that I took to California, and just, yeah, it's all nature.
Interesting. Holly, did you have anything else on that one? Otherwise, you get the next question.
No, I'm quite interested. I guess, was it a conscious decision to do artwork that was very different? Because, you know, like some bands when they're releasing stuff, they'll have like a theme that runs through everything, whereas you've kind of designed everything as its own thing.
Right.
That kind of like a conscious idea?
Yeah, I wanted people to have more than one reason to come and see the band or, you know, listen to it. So if they know us as people and they're like, oh, that's my buddy, I'm gonna go listen to it, well, that's cool. But if you don't know us and then you hear the song, okay, there's one reason. But if you don't know anything about the band, you see this weird artwork and you're like, well, what is that? You know, I mean, I know there are plenty of bands that I got into simply because I was like, wow, that album art is really cool. That's crazy to look at, or, you know, and I just wanted to stay away from like dark colors and all that. It just tends to kind of blend. And I was like, purples, greens, light blues, you know, reds or whatever, just to catch the eye. And and just stuff you could maybe turn into a poster later on or a sticker or whatever. Just something that I think people would be like, hey, that's cool. Even if they don't like the music, maybe they'll like the artwork.
So, Holly, were you done with that question before I ask another thing?
Yeah, I think so.
How's it? Okay, cool. I'm not cutting you off?
Yep.
All right, cool. Awesome. Okay, I want awkward silence there for a minute. Just Holly uncomfortable. But so let's talk for a minute just about the promotion of the album. So you can toot our horns if you want. You can say we're shit. I don't care one way or the other. But how did you... feel about the promotional cycle leading up to the album?
I loved it, and it was you guys are amazing, the best in the business.
You don't have to say that, like, you can tell us the shit.
No, really, I was really impressed by everything, and like all the coverage we've got, it's just been a huge blessing, and I'm really happy with everything. And then just like doing the interviews and having the opportunity to do that has been really interesting. I've never done anything like that. So it was really fun. It was really cool. And just with the way the album release went, streams and interest otherwise, I would say it was very successful.
Good. What do you think could have been improved on it, if anything, just out of curiosity?
I'm not really too sure. Honestly, I don't have really any complaints. I mean, it's my first venture into that, in this whole world anyway. So it's like, I don't have any reference point, but overall, I mean, I'm down with it. I love the way it went.
Okay. Holly has to dig on this now. I'm going to ask her to dig further on this question.
Okay. I guess I'm interested to know how, because you're so varied in terms of like genre influences and styles and everything that you do, how perhaps do you think it was received from like journalists, if that makes sense? How did you find the reception? Was it kind of what you expected, or was it maybe a few people didn't get it, or a few people did get it?
I really didn't hear anything negative. You know, anything that I did hear, any kind of criticisms kind of made, you know, it made sense to me. I think there was one review that was like, you know, it's a little fatty, you know, like it could have been trimmed down. There's a little excess. And I was like, okay, yeah, I could hear that for sure. Like there's a lot of stuff in there that maybe could have dialed back on. I mean, it's a 12 song debut album. It's a lot. So I get that. And I'm not really surprised. And then I did notice, like, we got submitted to a lot of a lot of metal magazines and reviewers. And I was like, okay. I was almost expecting them to be like, I don't mess with this. Cause I used to be in metal bands and I used to be like one of those kind of dudes. I get the attitude, you know, it's like, this is not, you know, so no. But I was really pleasantly surprised to see, you know, most people were really receptive to it and like, hey, you know, it's may not be like our thing, but I think objectively they were like, this is pretty solid. Cool.
So
yeah, that's
just
awesome.
So now out of curiosity, just on that, so just so you guys know, we only got about 9-10 minutes left, just so you know. I know it's short today, but just letting you guys know. So where was I going with this? So why do you think it is that people would have that attitude? Because I don't usually experience that. It's because everybody always tells me that there's an attitude with metal, but I haven't experienced it. You said you used to have it.
Oh yeah.
But I don't. Like, just for example, just for context, just because it's controversial, there's apparently all this hoopla that Bring Me the Horizon did that song with Ed Sheeran the other day, and people are apparently freaking out about it. I haven't seen any freak out except for the metal journalists claiming that there's a freak out on it. So but where do you see, like, I'm not trying to be a dick, I'm just asking, because I don't actually see it a lot of the time except for clickbait.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that maybe has calmed down here in the last couple of years. But like, I certainly remember being a kid, and which when I was a kid was the mid to late 2000s. But like, I remember that era. And so there would be like, there was like the MySpace era of metalcore and that kind of stuff. And a lot of metal people that I knew just as a kid, or like people who were older than me, maybe in high school or college or whatever, who were very like, oh, that's not real metal. Real metal is, you know, whatever, these thrash bands or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they just, it wasn't heavy. And then now, and you kind of fall into that trap. I noticed like a lot of young people especially fall into that trap where it's like they'll take that opinion at face value and they don't go and listen to the music. And I totally did that. I was like, oh yeah, Job for a Cowboy, I don't listen to that. That's at MySpace. And then listening to it now, I'm like, damn, like, that's actually a lot heavier than I thought it was. Yeah. But I never spent the time to listen to it. And I think that's where a lot of that stereotype comes from. But, and two, with the way social media is and everything's so accessible, it's like, there's no excuse to like be that guy. I mean, you know, you go out and you listen to it. Most of the time, people are pretty receptive now. And they're like, oh, okay, no, it's not.
I agree. Holly, what are your thoughts on this before we move on?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I haven't seen any negative comments really about the whole Ed Sheeran Bring Me the Horizon thing. To be honest, I absolutely love it. I can keep listening to it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I definitely did the thing when I was like in high school as a young teenager, being like, I don't know, getting into everything at first. I was a bit like, okay, yeah, this is metal, this is not metal. And then it's kind of like, actually the lines all blur and everything is kind of, you know.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, you just listen to what you like listening to anyway, so.
Right, yeah.
Did you see the Horizon Ed Sheeran thing, Brett, or no?
I haven't listened to it yet. I woke up this morning to a notification about it on YouTube and I was like, I'll have to check this out at some point.
It's weird, but it's not bad in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just super weird that Ed Sheeran is doing that with them, because like, I haven't heard anything from him in a while anyways, and then for his comeback to be with Bring Me the Horizon, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it worked, whatever. So we got time for a couple more questions. So Holly, you get to wrap up with the final two.
Ooh, I'm trying to think of something interesting. Where do you think your sound is going to go to, assuming that you're sort of going to evolve it a bit? What do you think you might do in the future?
Yes. So I have an idea for the next LP. I think this one was really, really clean on production, and it's very poppy, and it lends itself way more to that end. And I'd like to bring in some of those heavier influences on the next release. Just to have like some more, you know, some more chug in there, a little more of like a live sound. And I just want to change it up to kind of keep people on their toes. You know, it's when the next thing comes out, it's like, oh, like this is not necessarily pop rock, but I want to blend like the heaviness, the influence of like what metal and hardcore has had in my life with the, you know, melody of what we put out here recently.
So you're looking at metalcore?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. If I can learn how to play it, I'm not that good at guitar.
Well, it almost does kind of sound like it, because he said, you know, he wanted to do blend stuff.
Hey, you know, I'm open for whatever, you know. I just want it to be, I want it to always be a little bit weird.
Yeah, you know? No, that makes sense. So, Holly, we've got time for one more question. You want to wrap up with one final, and then I'm going to give him one final goofy one to wrap up.
Oh, I mean, this is not necessarily, well, this is a serious question, but it's not music related. What's your favorite road sign?
Favorite road sign? Oh, dude. I have no idea. I've never even thought about that. I'm gonna go with a bump sign on a construction site. Nice. Yeah,
that's cool.
Nostalgia for me.
Cool. And then my final question is: so, what is your favorite album of all time?
Ooh, that's pretty tough.
That's why it's final.
Man. Oh, you should have given me a little preparation to think about this.
No way. It's got to be right off the bat, dude. This is like the first All album right. that I'm on the count of 1, 2, 3.
All right. Revolver by the Beatles. I know that's contradictory to what I said earlier, but yeah.
Cool. Revolver is a good album. I can't dispute that one. That's a great album. There's two different versions of Revolver, though, isn't there? Isn't there one that's got two extra songs on it, or am I crazy?
I think there might be. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was like one version had two extra songs, if I'm not mistaken. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. So to wrap up the podcast, Brett, do you have any final words before we wrap up?
Thanks to anybody and everybody who listened to the record. I love you.
Awesome. And where can people listen to your music or buy your music?
You can buy it on Bandcamp, Jester Band, everywhere. That's on all our social medias. And then you can stream it on Spotify, Tidal, Deezer, any kind of other, Amazon, iTunes, Apple, all that good stuff. And YouTube, it's on YouTube.
Perfect. Okay. So with that, thank you very much, Brett, for coming on. And we are done.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.